Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Paul Toomey is here just after making some big news that will be heard around the world and the World Wide Web. He runs ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, that, among other things, assigns Internet domain names. Now, last week, they decided to open up the top-level domain names. In other words, the simple sorting system that you used to with .com, .org, .net, and .country names will expand to just about .anything if you're willing to pay the price. Your personal website could be yourname@yourname.yourname. They also voted to open web addresses to alphabets other than ours. Who cares? What does it mean for web surfing, journalism, justice, democracy? Paul Toomey, thanks for coming on with us.
Hello, Brian.
Why did we only have a few top-line domain names in the first place, like .com and .org? Why was the whole online world divided into for-profit and not-for-profit?
Oh, there's a series of questions. When the domain name system was first devised, which was really a way of making it easier to remember IP addresses, so the core way, the unique identifier for the Internet is these funny 12-digit numbers you see at the bottom of an Internet Explorer page. But you can't remember 202.463.60.01. Therefore, people devised these domain names. John Postel, who was one of the founders of the Internet and who really oversaw this part of the development, initially established these top-level domains in a tree and devised them for what was still essentially an American research network. So you had com for commercial, org for organizations, net for network-related things.
How far back does that go?
John was doing this back in the early 80s.
Early 80s. So it's 12, 15 years before most people thought of the Internet as such.
Yeah, and I might be quite wrong there. John might have been doing it earlier than that, but it certainly was in place at that stage. And he was confronted with an issue which emerged, which was, and the first one, of course, was MIL for the military. Originally it was .NATO, I think, and then .MIL. He was confronted with an issue that the network was growing internationally, and he was letting more and more people in the research network were joining this network. And so there was a pressure then to have, what do I do for a particular country? And there had been some approaches made by people from First Nations, for instance, and others saying, we want to have dot whatever
so then
in the First Nation.
You got .UK, .FR for France, etc.
So he found a very interesting tool, which was a table in National Standards Organization, keeps a table and said, I'm not going to make up country codes. I don't decide what a country is. If you're on this table, then you get a country code. And that's how we end up with these two-letter codes for countries.
Now, personally, I quite like the .org tag for my station, WNYC.org. We're a nonprofit media organization and very proud of it in this over-commercialized media world. Will our .org domain name soon become meaningless?
It won't become meaningless. The challenge ICANN's had since its formation was actually to introduce competition and choice for consumers. And so what we've moved to now is, after two rounds of experimental introduction of competition, so we've introduced in 2001 seven more, and in 2003 to present about another six or seven or eight have been introduced. What we've now learned out of that whole process is, okay, well, how would you liberalize this properly and let people apply? We will liberalize, many people can apply for TLDs. It will not mean the existing TLDs will lose their cachet or the usefulness. What they probably more mean is that consumers over a period of time will have a greater sense of choice about choosing their sense of identity. So you've got great pride in .org, you'll maintain .org.
But now people will be able to register domain names as .anything?
Well, the process will be an open process. So people can apply for any string. There will be several requirements, technical and business type requirements, because it's not a cheap thing to run a registry. And you've got to know what you're doing technically. But the second part of that is there will be some opportunities for challenge, particularly around a series of intellectual property type interests. Some certainly things about geographic names as they relate to sort of governments wanting to make certain that geographic names don't get misused. And the third one will be an objection around the basis of morality or public order, which is...
So there's been a debate about .xxx for adult material sites. Mm. Is that something you think you would approve?
Well, the process will be open for anyone to apply, and any objection processes will be at third parties objecting and we will have a series of international arbitration organizations handling those objections. What will come through that process, I don't yet know.
And so what point does this liberalization serve? To some people, it may, you know, at first strike us as it doesn't organize by anything, it disorganizes.
I can understand the point being made. We've been given advice by the technical core technical community that there's no reasons why you technical reasons why you would not move to having more TLDs in the zone. The question then remains whether, you know, if you want competition and choice, do you believe in a market or not? Do you think the market forces should be allowed to apply here or not? And I think overall, we've had 3 years of policy work from our global stakeholders, and they've come through basically saying on balance, we should actually follow that route. Yes, there will be confusion. I tend to make the analogy, it's a bit like moving from free-to-air broadcasting to cable TV. So that potentially you're moving from having three or four channels to having many hundreds.
What is ICON exactly? Is it a company? Is it part of the UN? What are you?
Well, we're certainly not part of the UN. ICANN is an international non-profit multi-stakeholder organization. We are unique. We're
one money of the stakeholder?
Multi-stakeholder.
Multi-stakeholder.
Yeah. We are, I think, one of those organizations which we're going to see more of in the 21st century, but we are, like, in some respects, the founding organization. In the sense that, like this, we have our processes of making decision are bottom-up processes. They're not top-down. I don't get to make the decisions, or the chairman doesn't get to make the decisions. You know, it's not like a sort of a company that way. It's a bottom-up process. Secondly, we have stakeholders. We've got 120 governments on our government advisory committee. We have a regional process around the world for consumer organizations and users organizations participate. We've got about 130 of those around the world. We have the registries and registrars who run the TLDs. We've got the country code operators. Basically, it's an open system.
So when I go to register.com or GoDaddy to buy a domain name, they're part of your organization?
GoDaddy and people certainly are, yes.
Yeah. And so where does your funding come from? Does it come from governments?
No. The funding comes from the people participating in the process, particularly the registries, the registrars, country code operators, regional internet registries who allocate IP addresses. And indirectly, it comes from the users. And so if you were to register for a .com address, for instance, about 20 cents of that transaction would come to us as a sort of fee to help bear our costs.
How much money did it cost to design and approve this new system?
So far, we have spent over about $10 million.
Ooh, that's a lot.
In development costs for just the process. And to finish the compliance work in terms of implementation, as to how we'll actually implement it, may cost us up another $10 million.
Really? Why that much?
Lots of lawyers. Lots of economists. We are a global organization looking at what is the only global technology. So, for instance, when you're trying to think through, when our policy people said, think about how this particular piece of intellectual property protection should work, then we had to actually look at a whole series of jurisdictions around the world, and think through the ways to work. So it's not like you're trying to solve for one country. You're trying to solve for a global process, and it can be complicated.
So if I want to go out and register Brian Lehrer at brianlehrer.brianlehrer, how much will it cost me?
Well, Our policy towards the development of this is that it'll be a cost recovery process. We don't make profit out of it, but that we can recoup that $10 to $20 million. The key question for you is going to be how many applicants we're going to receive and over what time frame. Our only judgment we can give
you mean
to
it'll
people,
be an auction?
No, it won't be an auction. The application fee will be somewhere in the low six-digit US dollars. So
$100,000?
Over $100,000.
Really?
And less than $500,000.
That's if you want a top-line domain name. That's
right.
If you want, like .com or .org. If
that's
you
right.
want to establish one of those in your own name or some name,
yeah.
That's going to cost six figures.
Yes. It's not that if you want to get the first Brian Lehrer, that'll be a different cost altogether, but yeah.
Do you see any implications for web content from all of this or just for how sites are named?
Well, it's definitely going to be an issue for, let me put it slightly differently, the way in which sites are named has increasingly been a reflection about people's sense of identity. And that's probably seen less inside the United States than outside the United States. So take my home country, which is Australia. People quite clearly get a .au domain name when they want to express that they're Australian.
.au for Australia.
Australian,
right.
And they'll get .biz or .info or .com if they want to express something that's global. We will see more and more examples of people trying to put communities of interest into TLDs and people wanting to express themselves in the community of interest. The second big area is that we're allowing this TLD strings now to be in what we call internationalized domain names, apart from Roman characters. And that does have really significant issues for usage. Let me give you the classic case study. In India, about 100 million people speak English. The Indian government has a program to put 600,000 villages on fiber and to wire them up. So that's talking about another 300, 400 million users of the internet. Those people do not read Roman characters. Though we're reading one of 11 scripts, which are the national scripts of India. Having all of the content, including the domain names, in the scripts of the village will be essential to allow the village to begin to be users of the internet.
And a billion Chinese speaking various forms of Chinese. So, but this only makes sense because the internet is a little bit too U.S.-centric right now, isn't it, because of the English or the Roman characters?
The Roman character aspects of it does make people in the Cyrillic world, the Arabic world, the South Asian and East Asian world feel uncomfortable. People have got used to it. I mean, English is an international language. The key point about the domain name system is it's not written in English. It's written actually in ASCII, which is a computer code, and it's only written in 37 characters, A to Z, 0 to 9, and a hyphen. You can't put a semicolon or an apostrophe, for instance, in a domain name. So the technical parts of that, it's really difficult to go from 37 to over 100,000 potential characters. That's the really interesting challenge.
Right. So was there opposition to that, allowing these different alphabets to be used for domain names? Opposition because there was fear that it would fracture the ability to communicate around the world rather than enhance it?
Well, I have to say through all our public consultation processes of the last 2 years on this topic, we have received some of those sort of comments. They've all come from North America. And that the comments that have come from the other parts of the world have been overwhelmingly, please give us our IDNs and give them to us now. So I think that's, you know, it probably tells you something about the view.
At the Personal Democracy Forum last month, I interviewed Jonathan Zittrain, the author of a new book called The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. And he said the internet is always just a few steps away from totally crashing if it weren't for devoted webheads who voluntarily keep it together. He called it the thin nerd line. Does that sound right to you?
Well, I can appreciate that. I mean, the ICANN community are the people who are really dedicated to keeping a single global interoperable network. That's what these domain names and IP addresses mean. They mean that 250,000 networks around the world operate as one single global internet. And Jonathan was pointing out the natural tendencies of big telco and other business models to sort of put people in walled gardens. We hear a lot around the world these days about next generation network. But next generation network is not the same thing as the internet per se. So this challenge about making certain we maintain a single interoperable internet, we should never take it for granted at all.
So should I assume you're a proponent of net neutrality legislation to make sure that some of these internet service provider companies can't just charge more to have certain websites download, then it'll become more of a corporatocracy?
Well, ICANN hasn't got a perspective on that, and to a degree that's a battle between the transit layer and the application layer, and we sort of sit between the two, if you like. But what we do definitely have a concern about is that people understand, and this is that the issues of the internet's addressing and routing system, which keep us this global internet, are quite different from the issues of the content that's carried on that network. And that's one of the things we get concerned about. People tend to confuse the two.
So what is this next generation internet?
Well, there's concepts that talked about next generation network, which a lot of it's coming out of groups like the International Telecommunications Union and the big, which often represent the big telecommunications carriers, interests and others. And it can be seen in many ways. If next generation network is about the integration of the telephony networks and the data networks using internet protocol, then that's just a continuation of this process. If it's seen as simply using IP inside telephone networks to keep them integrated, it's not the same thing. So it's a term that's being floated around at the moment that needs some unpicking.
So who do you expect to plunk down $100,000 or more for a domain name?
Well, we'll wait to see. We've already seen eBay was talking about potentially using a trademark. We expect to see a lot of people with trademarks putting their names down. We've seen just in our meeting in Paris, the mayor of Paris said that Paris will apply for a .Paris. And we've seen people have .NYC. There's a group for .NYC, .Berlin, number of these type of ones. We expect we'll get a lot of sort of generics, the dot shops, the dot webs. The clear thing inside is the dot web. There's lots of applications lining up for dot web, we understand. And then then there'll be a whole lot in other languages that we haven't seen yet.
So maybe we'll wind up as WNYC.NYC someday. Who knows?
Could be true.
Paul Toomey runs ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Very interesting glimpse into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.